I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves. And what better way to take care of ourselves than to understand more about our bodies? This series, I've teamed up with Fitbit. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better and understand your health with insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as my Fitbit helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Being partnered with Fitbit is inspiring, as they're encouraging everyone to make positive changes, and I hope this podcast does too. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I talk to Donal Skeen. Donal lives in LA with his wife Sophie and son Noah. He's one of Ireland's best known faces. He's super talented, having a very successful TV career, multiple books, and almost 1 million subscribers on YouTube. During his press tour for his new book, Superfood in Minutes, he made the time for us to sit down and have a good old chat. We talk about burnout, how good food can make you feel, and how important it is to sit down as a family for dinner. I hope you enjoy. Donal Skeen, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you very much. All of organising, what was it, like 2 or 3 hours ago?
I just can't believe it. And lately I've really believed in the universe. And last Tuesday you were in LA and you spoke about my podcast, and it was such an amazing moment for me. And then here we are, 1 week to the day later.
I know.
Sitting down together.
I know. And I was telling you that I was listening to the episode that you had done with Sheila Shoaga, and that I had been on a hike, and I was up for trying to get my head around the jet lag. And so I got up early to go for a hike, and got to the top right at the moment where Sheila starts doing a meditation. And I was like, oh, Jesus, this is the real stuff, like right now. Like, I couldn't have timed it better. So, but no, it's great. And I love what you do here.
Oh, thank you so much. And I've been a fan for a while now. I always catch up with you on TV. I used to turn on the TV every Saturday for Saturday Breakfast.
Oh, yes.
And be like, please be Donal, please be Donal, please be Donal. And then I never know when you'd be on. Are you still on that occasionally?
I do at the odd time. I mean, basically, what it was, because we moved to Los Angeles, and they kind of made a decision to make Matt Tebbutt the more regular host, because at a time there we were rotating between five of us. And what it kind of started becoming was that I was covering Halloween and Easter, and kind of those sorts of moments where I should be with my family. So, and also you're traveling across the world to do it. So I've stepped back a little bit, but if the opportunity comes up and I'm in town at the right time, we'd absolutely say I could do it. Yeah.
You're home to promote your new book, Superfood in Minutes. A lot of the people who listen to the Good Glow podcast are into health and they want to get that glow, and you can get a glow from vegetables. I believe in that, and healthy living. And we're going to talk about all that. But I want to start with asking you about LA, because your career was skyrocketing in Ireland and the UK. And then all of a sudden you were off to LA. So can you just tell us a little bit about why you decided to make that move?
Oh, well, I mean, it was an interesting one because it was a real big life decision, as you can imagine. You know, we were very settled here. We had so much kind of going on, and I was so busy with a lot of the stuff that I had been doing. But I did find that I was kind of in a bit of a routine, and I was doing the same thing in and out, you know, every single year. And I think, like, I listened to a lot of the podcast episodes you were mentioning, you know, and one thing that kind of comes up is that kind of taking a risk and, you know, jumping out there. And LA kind of came around in a roundabout way. We had been over doing, we had just started a YouTube channel at the time, and Jamie Oliver had kind of catapulted us into the world of YouTube through his FoodTube channel. And I had no idea. I had a YouTube account that had, I don't know, like all like old appearances that I'd been up, or it was just a way to catalog stuff. It was basically just an account I had, an email and a password. And he kind of just showed us that this is going to be the next frontier. It's kind of like what podcasts are becoming now, and YouTube was just taking off at that stage. And so we actually were filming a documentary for RT2 called Donal's YouTube superstars. And so we were over in Los Angeles for a big event called VidCon, which is this YouTube conference. It's huge every year. It's kind of evolved over the years from becoming this kind of like, you know, creator sort of thing where everyone got together and kind of explored ideas and kind of was quite educational. And I suppose now it's become even more kind of about the fans and the crazy, crazy VidCon fans. So we were over there, we were filming it, and I just realized that like this is the hub of where YouTube was. And at the time, I think we'd had like great success. We'd like in the space of 6 months, we'd gone from, you know, whatever I had before, like a couple of thousand subscribers to 100,000 subscribers. And so there was this mad catapult of, you know, brand new audience. I'd been on traditional TV for a good few years at that point, and the cookbooks and the TV was a very kind of traditional way into media. And from that perspective, I was like, oh my goodness, we have this like completely different audience and an international audience as well. So that was one of the reasons I kind of was looking to LA as a destination. There was a lot of the creators around at that time, and a good friend of ours over there, Rosanna Pansino, who's like one of the biggest YouTubers. She has 12 million subscribers. She kind of is based in LA, and there was a lot of other kind of YouTubers like that. So it was always kind of a nice community that was kind of growing. So that was one of the main reasons. There was definitely the YouTube aspect of it. But then the other side of it was I had been in talks for quite a while with Food Network in the US to do a show for them. And you know, the thing is, like, it always looks like it's an overnight thing, but I had been meeting them since I was 22. Wow. I was going over to New York. I remember doing the Today Show on NBC in New York for the first time ever and getting a meeting with Food Network and going, oh my God, this is incredible. And like, it's the stuff I had, you know, dreamed about. So that was a slow process. You know, you go over once in a blue moon and you kind of drop in and you say who you are and what you do and you try and sell yourself as best you can. And it must have been like 5 or 6 years before after I'd met them first that I got a call out of the blue saying, we're really excited about what you're doing at the moment. We've seen what you're doing on YouTube. We'd love you to come in, and we actually have a show idea that that we were already working on. So they had Food Network Star was kind of like their Master Chef basically on Food Network, and they were doing a kids version, and I had done Junior Master Chef on the BBC at that point, so I had experience judging children, which always sounds terrible, but yeah, so I had that experience in the sort of competition style shows as a judge and as a host. And so the opportunity came up to do this show, Food Network Star Kids, and like I didn't even have to audition or anything. I was like, I was pinching myself that it just kind of landed on my lap. And then they rang me up and told me that my co-host was going to be Tia Mori from Sister Sister, who like I think any Irish person grew up watching, you know, Sister Sister will know how cool that moment is. And so that was it. And so we went literally a month or a few weeks later, we decided we were back and forth to LA at that point and taking meetings and stuff like that. And Sophie and I actually, so we had literally the day we got engaged, we got an email from our landlord saying that they were going to sell the house and we would have to find somewhere else. And it was just a sign. It was for us, it was a sign that, you know, we have to go and take this opportunity. We're, you know, we were at, I think we were like 27 at the time, and we were just like, this is the time to do it. We're, you know, right now with one child and another child of the way, I can see how difficult, like, I wouldn't do it now. I absolutely wouldn't do it now. So it was definitely the time to do it. And so we moved lock, stock and barrel over to Los Angeles, and I've been there for 4 years now. I can't believe that.
And is it home now?
It is in a sense, but like Ireland is always the home, you know, like all our family are here. Loads of our friends are here. So I think Ireland will always be home for us. But I mean, Los Angeles is an amazing place to live. I don't know that it's home, but it's definitely an incredible city to live in.
I always feel like America is a couple of years ahead of Europe in terms of like healthy living, work-life balance. Like, do you have a nice lifestyle there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you can make your experience in Los Angeles what you want it to be, you know. And I think you look at it as a city and it's 14 million people. It's one of the most diverse in terms of cuisines that you can come across. And from a food lover, you know, I have to stop myself eating out because there's just so much. And it's beyond the sort of Michelin star restaurants and fancy places. It's actually some of the most interesting food in Los Angeles is these strip mall joints where the rent is low and you get really exciting, inspirational people who'll come in and do something truly different and also not charge you too much, which is always great. But I think from that perspective, yes, like there's that whole healthy eating, you know, fad that kind of that everyone associates with Los Angeles, and that does exist, you know. And so in a way, I think we've always been mindful to kind of keep the feet on the ground and, you know, not change too much who we are because we live in a certain place. And I think LA can be that in lots of ways. And, you know, we know people who've moved over and go the full LA.
It's with like the full accent Monty. Included.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, I think if I came home with a big LA accent, I think I'd be killed. So
kicked back out. But that's exactly. The thing. Like, even like I was flicking through your book and there are so many lovely recipes in it that I feel like are kind of LA inspired a little bit.
I would say there's definitely inspiration. I think Superfood in Minutes, I mean, we had Meals in Minutes out last year and the TV show was on RT, and the book did really, really well. And, you know, that was my 8th cookbook, and my goodness, like, it's a slog to kind of get those numbers up and to make sure that the audience is there and who, you know, you're. But one of the biggest things when Meals in Minutes rolled around was that I kind of, for years I've been writing recipes, and I think it was coming to the realization that actually I wanted to write recipes for a purpose. And, you know, when we moved out of home first, I had a kitchen that was not fully stocked the way I normally had it, with like every piece of equipment I could possibly have. And all of a sudden we were in Airbnbs and we had like literally a pot, a pan, and maybe a hob if we were lucky, you know. So it made me kind of look at how people were cooking and how people with not a well-stocked kitchen were cooking. And so all of a sudden I was looking to quick cooking stuff that really makes life a little bit easier. And, you know, we have always had a busy schedule, so there's always been an impetus to kind of try and find these things that make life that bit easier. Because I think everyone goes through that problem of standing in front of the kitchen at 5 o'clock going, what is for dinner? How am I going to magic something out of what's in the presses? So Meals in Minutes kind of evolved from that. And I think, you know, the reason it has done well is because it serves a purpose for people, you know. And I think of my reason and the job that I do, and it's to be writing recipes in service of home cooks, you know. Mm-hmm. People at home who have to create dinner and have to come and magic it out of the air.
And
no
as well
time.
For people who are just starting out, like I love cooking now, but when I was in my 20s, I used to follow your recipes because they were very easy to follow. Okay. And they always taste, everything tasted nice. Because sometimes if you get into like a really complicated recipe, you're like at the end of all this work because you didn't have one or two ingredients that were needed. It's awful.
This is the biggest complaint I get, you know. And I had been at that stage up until like last year, I'd been writing these lovely kind of cookbooks, but I kept finding that people weren't actually, you know, cooking as regularly from them as I would have liked to, or I would have liked them to. And I think it is that moment of like, oh my goodness, like what are we going to have for dinner and how are we going to do it in a short amount of time, but also looking to flavor. Like one thing in Superfood in Minutes is that like there's cheat ingredients like a chipotle paste, which sounds fancy, but you can get in most supermarkets now, and it adds this great flavor. And it's combine that with a tin of tomatoes, a tin of chickpeas, some prawns that you've picked up from, you know, the supermarket or whatever, and you pop that in a pan in, you know, and literally in less than 15 minutes you have a gorgeous dinner that is booming with flavor. And it's like what you said, you know, if you're going to go to the effort and you're not a great cook, you want that hit of flavor, you want mm-hmm. the payoff if you're going to go to the trouble of doing it. And that is one of the biggest things that, you know, I've really tried to hone in on Superfood in Minutes, is really kind of look into recipes that will give you that payoff at the end of the day. And not only that, but like looking to the veggie intake as well, because I think, you know, with Meals in Minutes it was a lot of comfort food, I'll be honest. But with Superfood in Minutes, it's really, you know, it's, I always say the cookbooks tend to be a little bit self-indulgent in the sense that like these are the playbook of recipes that I want to cook for the next year or so. And Superfood in Minutes definitely came off the back of a new baby and going, oh my god, I think we all need to do a bit of exercise and eat a bit better. So Superfood in Minutes was exactly that. And, you know, I love the concept of quick cooking, but how could we inject that with even more veggie options? And like throughout the book, we're looking at how many veggie portions a day can you get into each recipe. So it's a big part of it. And it definitely has kind of dictated the way we cook at home as well.
And talk to me about vegetables and your diet. Like, are you very conscious of what you're eating all
the
time?
I mean, it's changed over the years, I think, you know. And as a cook, when you kind of evolve, there's all sorts of different recipes you try. But I think the sort of foods that I cook most regularly at home are, you know, really good quality meats and veggies. And I try not to kind of mix, you know, pastas and things into that. But if I'm going to have pasta, I'm going to have pasta. Uh-huh. Yeah. And go all in.
Do you know what?
I went
to counselling after I got cancer, and I was like, oh my God, I just get so worried about everything I'm eating, and there's all this guilt. And my counsellor was like, okay, well, if you're going to have pasta once a week, you sit down and you enjoy that pasta, every single bite of it. So now when I do treat myself or I have something absolutely gorgeous when I go to a restaurant, like, it's okay. But you just appreciate the moment.
You do. And I think, like, that's a really positive outlook to have on food, because I think a lot of people get caught up on the diet side of things. And, you know, the book is called Superfood in Minutes, but there's, you know, and there's a few quinoa recipes in there. But, like, it's not chia seeds. It's not, you know, coconut oils and things like that. It's real food, you know, and it's real food that has a focus on high quality meats, good grains, you know, good fats and things that that are good for you, basically. And I suppose as a food lover, you know, you see fads and trends come and go, and one of those kind of, I think the healthy eating thing has had a moment, and now all of a sudden we're actually looking to kind of what does real food look like with a healthy slant. And I think that's what Superfood is a celebration of. It's, you know, you can still have a gorgeous pasta dish. Like, there's a cacio pepe, which is one of my favorite pasta dishes, with just black pepper and this silky sauce, but adding, you know, a brassica like kale in there, and automatically you've upped your veg intake for the day. So it's a simple approach to what I take as somewhat healthy eating, and I hope it inspires other people to kind of take that approach too.
It's almost like healthy comfort food in a way. Like
some of them, yes.
Some of them. I don't want to offend you by saying
No. There's definitely pasta dishes in there where there's definitely some comfort ones in there for sure.
Tell me a little bit about your family. I was looking through your Instagram page earlier, and I was like getting a lump in my throat because you're very honest about missing Noah and your wife, and you've got another baby on the way. But then you also have to work and you have to go. But I love the way you say that you don't say goodbye, you always say see you later.
Yeah, Jesus, you'll have me in tears. Do you know the funniest thing is, like, since he was, I never cried, you know, in my 20s, and like, that since Noah was born, I am on the verge of tears most days. Just even thinking, so like, yes, but it is that kind of thing that, I don't know, kids do a crazy thing to you that, I don't know, they upset. I'm sure for women it's a complete hormonal thing, but I don't know what it is for men. But I think for me, it's always that difficulty, because I work from, it's kind of trying to find the balance, I think, I struggle with the most, because, you know, being away from home, I still have a career here, and I come back as regularly as possible as I can. And, you know, we have a production company in Dunleary as well. So like, I have to kind of come back quite often. And to be honest, you know, we came over during the summer, and, you know, I look at what we're doing, and you kind of see Noah hanging around with my mum and his granny, and just having family and friends close by, and you kind of see, God, it could be just a little bit easier. And, you know, when I travel, Sophie's not left alone to look after him. And so there's a lot of that kind of creates a bit of anxiety towards, you know, travel for me now, where it never, like, I used to skip out the door with my suitcase and not look
back. Put in the earphones and not look back.
And yeah, actually, I came over from London this morning and had the earphones in, and I was like, oh, so this is what it's like to travel. I kind of remember what it was like traveling without children. But no, I think it's important to talk about those things, because I think so many parents, especially new parents, really struggle with so many aspects of becoming a new parent. And I certainly have, and certainly my wife Sophie has. And I think, like, it's that moment of kind of going, I suppose I posted something recently before I left, and it was that kind of honest take, because it is difficult, you know. And so many people on that post recently just shared their stories, and I felt great in the sense that I knew I wasn't alone, you know. And I think social media has awful sides, but it also has really positive sides when you do share something that is something that's relatable and something that's people can, you know, really understand. I mean, I said in that post that I left them all behind and got into an Uber, and there was a grandmother driving the car, and she could, like, I was bawling in the car, like, for a few minutes after we left. And you know, she was there and, you know, telling me stories about her grandchildren and, you know, how hard she finds it to leave. And it's, I think in society, it's that kindness and that relatability that's really important. And, you know, I think for a lot of time I've spent, you know, in the public eye, you kind of lock that side of you away. And there's, you know, showing kind of vulnerability has always kind of been not shameful, but something that you kind of protect a little bit.
Because it's so hard to, like, put 100% of yourself out there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's something that, you know, it's a conversation we've been having quite a lot lately, because for a very long time, you know, when I see something negative, I swallow that pill rather than share it. And I think, you know, someone like yourself or a lot of people I'm seeing where there's this turn of the tide where actually, you know, when someone says something negative, people call them out on it. And, you know, I think that's a really positive thing. And I think I have not done that for a very long time, because you do kind of, you don't know, you know, certainly when you're starting out in a career, you don't know what that means. Is it the end, you know, when someone says something negative, is that the end of your career? And, you know, with time and age, you have a lot more kind of, you know, confidence in the sense that, you know, you can step up to the mark and, you know, and keep rocking on. And I've been doing it for 10 years and I can tell you that, like, your career doesn't end when someone says they don't like your past or it's shite. So, so it's, you know, it is that thing to have, to build that confidence, and that doesn't come overnight.
And what's the difference in, like, having a show on American TV to Irish and English?
Well, I don't think, like, when I started on RT, you know, it's not an overnight kind of thing where people recognize you and stuff. But now when you kind of, you go to the supermarket, especially in the supermarkets, like, people like associate you with food and they're looking in your shopping basket and things like that. But no, I mean, I think it's very different. And in a way, it was kind of interesting to go to Los Angeles where you are completely unknown. You've never been on TV there. And, you know, with one show, you're not going to, you know, as I well know, with one show, you're not going to kind of, you know, catapult yourself into being famous. But I think from that perspective, it's a very different thing, you know. And it's just so huge out there. The market is incredibly large. You know, you have a show on Food Network, but there's about 25 other major networks that are out there. And then you have, nowadays, you have these over the top platforms like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and all these different kind of places where people are picking and choosing. So I think that traditional model of TV has changed a little bit. So it's going to America to kind of become a TV star is not what it used to be, I think, in that way. And in some ways, that's a good thing. You know, it allows for a little bit of anonymity. And in some ways, kind of, you can put your head down and do what you do.
Something about you that I've noticed that's very rare is you've made it traditionally, like, on the TV with your books, but then you also made it digitally, which normally doesn't happen. Both doesn't normally happen to people, that crossover.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's definitely something that it's very hard for a lot of people, like, when you go into a pitch meeting or something like that, it's always very hard for them to place who you are, because like, are you a food blogger, are you a TV host, are you a cookbook author? And I think
you're like, I'm everything.
Well, I try and straddle them all, but I think that's always been it's somewhat a strength, and then sometimes, you know, people can't place you because of it. But I think for me, it's always been that creative side of being able to do quite a few different things has been interesting. And, you know, where a traditional TV host just turns up for the job and a production company has done all the work for them, I love being involved in that process from the very get-go, and I love taking control of what that can be. And Meals and Minutes, really, you know, with our team at Appetite Media and Dunleary, like, we really have crafted something that is ours, you know, that isn't something that's been directed by, you know, someone else. It's really something that we own and we love. And I mean, we've had great success with Meals and Minutes. It's gone across the world. It's I just came back in May from an Asian press tour, which is just, like, sometimes I look back and I go, like, I couldn't make it up, you know. It's mad stuff. And there was people turning up to, you know, the airport with signs and things like that, and outside the hotel and all this sort of stuff. So it's my mind boggles with that sort of stuff, because it doesn't feel real, you know. It doesn't it's the sort of stuff you kind of imagine but never really think it'll happen. So
happen to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you get moments where you can just be in the moment and appreciate those times?
Yeah, I do. I think I've been much more mindful of that in recent years than when I first started out. I think, you know, when I started at like 21 22, you know, I had no idea what I was getting into. You know, I liked the idea of having a TV show, and it was a kind of a natural progression from the food blog I had started, because that's where it all came from, essentially, in 2007. And, you know, a book led from that, and then a TV show led from that, and it's just been this kind of treadmill ever since. And I think from that perspective, I remember kind of getting to about like 5 years into it and going, oh my God, I'm exhausted. And I remember actually we filmed, so I had done 3 television shows in 1 year, and the final show we did that year, I was in Vietnam, and I knew I was going into a nationwide tour of Ireland in theatres. We did like 21 shows across Ireland, and I knew I was going into that, but I was in Vietnam and I got sick, and literally just came to a full stop, and I could not, which I have never done in my life before, but I couldn't turn up for the day of work. And like, this is coming from someone who works most weekends and, like, you know, keeps the show on the road. And I just remember being in a hotel room in Vietnam. Actually, I ended up in a bloody hospital in Vietnam to get medication, and just going, this isn't working anymore. This isn't the way I want it to be. And I'm actually not really enjoying it anymore. And I think that was a really honest conversation to have, because I think anyone who has a bit of success, there's always that guilt of like, why am I not enjoying this? This should be like, this is everything you're working for, and this is everything you wanted, and now you've got it and you're just not happy. And I think there was an element of burnout that kind of came at that point. And I took a bit of time and we did the tour. and that's the thing, you know, the show has to keep going in some respects. And after the tour was done, I really stepped back over that Christmas, and through the December to the January, I really kind of spent a time. I did a course called Potential Life with Tal Ben-Shahar, who's he's the author of one of Harvard's most popular kind of happiness talks in Harvard University. And he kind of was talking about, you know, understanding stress, because that was probably one of the biggest issues, is that I was saying yes to everything. Mm-hmm. I was stressing through it and trying to get everything done. And when I kind of came to the realization that stress, I always believed stress was a negative, but actually stress can actually be a positive. And he was presenting that idea that, you know, by adding stress, using stress, you can get to deadlines, you can write a book, you can make a TV show, you could do whatever you need to do in that stage. But I think he was pointing out that unless you put in that time for recovery, you're never going to be able to kind of get out of that stress place. And that was my biggest issue at the time. I was going from one job to the next and just saying yes to everything, because you do, you know, when you're at that age, and also you have the energy to do it when you're 25, 26. And so I was saying yes to everything I was doing, and not building in recovery, and also not in understanding what recovery was. So I really at that stage got into yoga and meditation. And I had been doing yoga since I was like 19, on and off. And I knew it was a place where I felt really calm, and I knew it was a place where I felt really grounded. And to kind of get back to that stage has always been, for me, a really important thing. And I've learned that it's a really important thing. So, you know, I try and build in that time when I know it's a stressful period. Like at the moment, we're here sitting in Dublin, and I've had this mad rush to kind of prepare for this trip, because the book is out and there's a promo trail, and there's this person's booked you here and this person's booked you there. And, you know, you're trying to kind of scramble to make everything work. And also you're 6,000 miles away from family. So there is that element of, I know when I come back. So we've actually booked a little 3-day getaway for as soon as I get back. And that, you know, that's just pure family time. I'm going to put the phone away and really just take that time to ground. And, you know, even with Sophie, we were talking about, you know, the fact that you take Noah for the first half of the day and I'll take him for the next half of the day. And then we'll actually feel like we got time off. So I think, It certainly wasn't something I started out with, but it's been a product of the career I've had. Yeah,
it's like what Jerry Hussey says. He says, if you don't take time to prioritize your health now, you will be forced to take time for your illness later.
That's 100% where I was at.
And isn't it amazing, though, that you realized that before it went bang? Because I didn't. I just kept going. And then boom, I woke up one day and I had cancer.
Really?
And there was nothing I could do. Like you said, you woke up that day and you couldn't go to work. Mm. There was no other option. I woke up one day, I was told I had cancer, and I was told to cancel my plans for a year.
Wow.
Which I found really hard to get my head around. Mm. Like, I was ringing people in work and saying, I'll be back in 3 months. Yeah. My cancer hasn't spread. They'll give me a blast of chemo and I'll be back. Mm. And everyone around me was like, Georgie, sorry, I don't think you realise how serious this is.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that you had that ability to recognise that your body was saying no to something.
Well, I think it certainly wasn't as extreme as that, you know. And I think, you know, it's were you touching on that sort of mindfulness or anything like that before it had hit?
I was doing a bit of yoga, and I didn't it's like I wasn't aware that I could feature on my to-do list. Stress was a badge of honor for me. I was always running around putting everyone else ahead of myself. It was just busy life. Mm-hmm. I was running to work. I was always late, frantic energy. I had an amazing team in work, but I always sent them out for their lunch breaks and I stayed.
Kept going.
I just kept going until I couldn't anymore. Mm. But there's so many people that listen to this podcast who I think are in that rat race. And I think that's what this podcast has done. Like, I got a message from someone once saying they're a busy mom, they've got three kids, they had a sick parent, and it was go, 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 go. And they listened to this podcast. And then one day she locked herself into the bathroom and had a 40-minute shower. And I was like, yes!
That's what my wife does quite regularly. If I turn over the responsibility.
That's what it's about, isn't it? Just taking that time for yourself sometimes. Yeah. And what are your healthy habits or your self-care techniques?
I have a good few because it does come. And I always kind of, then it's interesting enough, like, so I spent that time kind of getting my head around what it was to kind of have that time for rest and restoration. And then I started beating myself over the back with this list that I'd made of like meditation and then the yoga and then the mindfulness and the gratitude and then, you know, the preparedness and all this sort of stuff. So what I've kind of come to the conclusion is, and I would say that, you know, even there's a whole section on meal planning in the book. And, you know, when I went to meal planning as a way of kind of helping myself be less stressed and kind of know what's for dinner, because it does have a part to play, you know, in our diets and all that sort of stuff. But when I started meal planning, I made the meal plan for the breakfast, the lunch, the dinner, the snack after lunch, and the nice bit of popcorn in the end. And like, you end up with a shopping list that's down the walls, and you literally, you know, you don't get through the food. So I would say for me, it's always been kind of, if I can do one thing and achieve that in the day, and even if that is taking deep breaths, you know, and just taking a moment to kind of go and stop.
Yeah.
I think that's really been important. And I would say exercise is a key thing, you know, and I think, you know, whether that's, I am not a gym bunny. I can't stand the gym, but I will go to yoga class or I'll go for a hike. I mean, the one thing when we were living in Ireland was we lived in Houghton, so I would literally stomp around that cliff walk like it was nobody's business, and that would be my daily thing. And I do that in LA as well now. We live quite close to some of the mountains, and if I'm up early, I'll go before Noah and Sophie are up and bring the dog for a walk, or equally, you know, when Noah's gone down to bed, try and get out. And that really does click a reset button. That is really important for anyone, I would recommend. If you're listening to this now and you're going, oh my God, I just don't know. Even if you feel like you don't have the time, push yourself to just go out and take a walk. It just is an instant reset. That moment of breathing in fresh air is so important. I say that and I live in LA and the air isn't so fresh over there, but it definitely helps.
It's definitely, there's something about exercising in nature that's so different to exercising in a gym.
Yeah.
It's like a full body cleanse or something.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was going through chemo, I used to get out into the fresh air, into parks every day because I wasn't able to hike, but just getting out and seeing the grass and the trees, and it did so much for me. Tell us a little bit about what ingredient you can't live without, because for me, you're probably going to laugh, right? But I can't eat my dinner without black pepper.
Okay, that's a good ingredient.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's, I like that.
And I put it on everything, but am I ruining my dinner by doing that?
You were a product of the 90s. And because I think, I always remember like black pepper becoming, and like, it's amazing because now there's a bit of a change now where people are using white pepper, and you know, where white pepper was the only thing you ever saw on like, you know, your school lunch table where you'd dare each other to sniff it just to start coughing. But you know, black pepper is one of those ingredients that would just, like, it was black pepper and pesto and, you know, different an Italian kind of food at that time. But no, I think that's brilliant. You know, if it adds flavour and gets you excited about the food, absolutely go for it.
And you do talk about harissa paste a lot, because that you could get that in Tesco, actually. You can't get it in many supermarkets over here, but harissa paste, I make kind of spicy rice with harissa.
Okay.
It's so nice. A few prawns.
Well, if you've had a chance to look through the book, harissa features quite heavily.
Yeah.
And the reason I love something like harissa is that, and it's a really great kind of, the ideology behind Superfood Minutes and Meals and Minutes is that, like, you're taking one ingredient that might infuse, like pesto, for example. You know, a shop bought pesto, as much as it's not as good as a fresh one, you're still getting basil, pine nuts, a good olive oil, and some parmesan cheese, and it's four ingredients in one. In the same sense, harissa is this like gorgeous North African spice paste that has so many different spices in it that, you know, I often use the analogy that, like, when I visit, if you visit Thailand or a street food market in Thailand, there's often a lady who is making a Thai curry paste, and she has a big, you know, whole stack of ingredients that she's using that if you were to make at home, you know, you'd be under the floor with the amount of ingredients. So I like the idea that you can use these sorts of ingredients to pep up your food. And like you said, you know, if that's prawns and rice, and, you know, all of a sudden those things become a little bit more interesting by using an ingredient like that. So I would say, as much as it's quite healthy eating in the book, it's definitely that idea of using flavorful ingredients. So I can't pinpoint one. Don't make me decide.
Oh, tell us about farmers markets, buying kind of fresh organic, or going to the supermarket. Like, should we be going to farmers markets
more often? Yeah, I mean, if you have one close by. I mean, I think we didn't have a great one close to us when we were here in Ireland, but like, there's some places in Ireland that have really fantastic food markets. And the one thing I would say is that, you know, really good quality food is worth paying the money for. You know, if that's high quality meats, you know, we eat quite a lot less meat than we used to, but when we do, we really get the best of it, and you know, enjoy that, you know, enjoy cooking it the right way and creating something delicious with it. So I would say that's an important aspect of it. And like, coming home to Ireland, like, even in 4 years, it has changed so rapidly. We had a couple of years ago, I had a magazine called Feast, and the whole idea of that magazine was to kind of showcase Irish producers. And I travelled literally in my car, me and Sophie and the camera, and I would go around and we'd photograph these pieces for the magazine. And the beautiful thing about that is that you kind of uncover these fantastic stories of producers who are passionate about what they do. And they're not only just producing a product that it tastes good, but they're really, really excited by it. And I think not only that, but that shines through in the flavor that you get from an ingredient. So I would say it's trying to look for the better and higher quality ingredients and incorporating them into your regular cooking as much as possible. And Ireland, really, like, going to LA, like, you have to kind of look for it. I mean, unless you're shopping in Whole Foods, where everything starts at $5 a pop.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to look at and be mindful what you're buying. So organic has always been a big one for me, as much as I can possibly afford. And, you know, I think that sort of approach to it, where you're trying to choose the best where you can, I think is a really important one.
When you're coming into Dublin on the plane, when you're landing, like, what is, obviously you're so excited to see your family, but is there something you're kind of dying, is there a tradition you're dying to get back to, or like a family meal, or is it a food that you miss when you're away?
Well, the funny thing is, like, I always come home and stay with my mum and dad, and I'm now 33. So, like, I'm such a cheapskate that I won't put myself up in a hotel or anything. I will stay with my mum and dad, and there's that guarantee. Like, even today now, we're sitting here and I rang my mum as I got off the plane this morning, and I was like, so I'll be home for dinner, just so you know, what are you cooking?
Is there pressure there for her?
No, she's a fantastic cook, and like, I learned so much from her growing up. But it is that kind of family meal and sitting down to dinner, and you know, that tradition has always been key for us. And actually, it's something that we try, well, as I'm sure you know, it's you when you have a kid, like, to try and sit down for dinner and really take in that moment where it is a moment to kind of reset and deep breathe and kind of, but that rarely happens with a 1.5-year-old. but no, I think sitting down to dinner with, whether it's family or friends, is a really important action. And I think it's probably one of the biggest things we've lost in this generation, where, you know, phones are on the table, you know, people probably don't sit down for dinner the way they used to. Like, I remember when I was coming home from school, like, that would be the thing, like, that would be the moment before the rest of the evening would go off. And you know, it was always a really important thing for us, and it's definitely something I want to attempt to create. Though we had dinner just before I left, and Noah was sucking chickpeas off the table, and I was like, oh, Jesus.
At least your child eats chickpeas.
For now.
Best of luck with everything over the next couple of months. I cannot wait to see what you're going to do next, but enjoy the moment of family time and your next chapter as a family. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for making time for my podcast today.
Thank you. And a huge congrats on it, because I see it's soaring in success. So it's a really good, it's a credit to you guys. Well done.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, made possible by Fitbit. Fitbit wants you to be empowered by providing you with personalized data about your health so you can make positive changes to lead a healthier lifestyle. Life is about balance and action, not lots of distractions. Get to know yourself better and understand your health with Fitbit. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review and follow me on Instagram at Georgie.Crawford.